Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Tzadik Dalet. And yesterday we left off right after the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that if you have a guy who married four wives, and let's see why we need to talk about a case of four wives. I mean, doesn't seem so far to be anything very important about the additional one that we added to the previous Mishnah of three wives, but we'll see. In any event, we pay out according to the earlier ketuvah. And what's more, the Mishnah even said that the earlier ketuvah could be even earlier in the same day that it would be the earlier ketuvah. But one of the interesting things that the Mishnah said was that whoever is collecting first is going to have to swear to the woman who comes after her, who challenges her right of collection on the basis of the fear. Well, maybe if you go ahead and collect your ketuvah, there won't be enough left for me to collect my ketuvah. I want you to swear that you actually did not already collect your ketuvah or parts of the ketuvah while our husband was alive. Then she has to swear. So that one has to swear to two, two has to swear to three, three has to swear to four. But, says the Tanakhama, four has no one to swear to because all of the other women are perfectly happy with their settlement. They all have their ketuvah. You don't have to swear to the children because the children are adults, we said. And somehow or other, Ben Anas comes along and says, nope, the fourth one also has to swear. What, just because she's the last one, she gets away with murder? So what are they arguing about? I mean, who is she supposed to swear to? Bananas appears to be absolutely off the wall. Ah, well, let's talk about over here that one of those fields, it turns out that we're talking about that there may be, now this is a whole machlokas, whereas does it mean, as Rashi learns, that we found out that actually one of the first three wives were holding a field that had belonged to someone else and didn't really belong to their husband? And they're very nervous now that at any minute, this guy may show up and take away that field, in which case she's going to have to go back and collect the field from someone who already took after her. He says, well, I thought that I had a field, but turns out I don't. So now I'm going to collect from you. So then if that's the case, then four has to also write, has to swear, because she may be collecting a field that she's going to have to go to court about and is going to be taken away. And therefore, if the other ones are in doubt, then she would have to swear to them. So basically, that's how Rashi learns it. Now, there's a lot of simple problems with that we don't have to go into. But the other way of understanding it, which is Rabbi Yochanan's pshat, it doesn't mean that we know that one was not his. It means we always have to worry that one of them did not belong to the person who collected it. So if the fourth one collects and there's nothing left, so then the woman who's going to lose that field when the guy comes to collect it, if such thing turns out, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is going to have to go and try to collect for her ksuva. So therefore, Ben Anas is saying that the fourth one has to also swear so that she doesn't end up making the other wives lose their property. Now, of course, this raises the issue of would they lose their property? Couldn't they go back and get it out from her, even if she hadn't sworn? All of this we're going to be talking about. And you know what they're arguing about? They're arguing about whether a Baal Chov Mu'uchar Shekadam V'Gava is a good Gvia. So if a person who had a later She'ibud, in the event that he was actually bought out because another guy got to court first, and the other guy came, collected whatever was due him, and now it turns out that when he collected, it was a mistake because it belonged to somebody else. Can he go back now and actually collect, or is it overs? We did talk about this, remember, before. And so the Tanakhama holds, well, if you collected property based on a lien, and it turns out that that property was not properly collected, so then just because the guy that got there before you has it, you can take it away from him if you have the earlier lien. So it doesn't really matter, therefore, according to the Tanakhama, because it's not considered to be a meaningful legality. The Tanakhama, it's Masha Gava, Lo Gava. And therefore, the wife number four, if it turns out that she didn't have a right to it, she's going to have to anyway return it to the earlier one. And if one of the first wives loses a field, so she can go ahead and collect it from the fourth wife and say, listen, I have an earlier lien. You collected on your lien, but it was a mistake because it turns out that my earlier lien was never satisfied. And so then why should she have to swear? What is she going to swear to? Because number two says to her, listen, I'm nervous. Something might happen to my field. And then if you walk off with the field, I'll never be able to get it. What do you mean you'll never be able to get it? Of course you will. You have an earlier lien. Yeah, but you already collected. Yeah, but a Balkhov that already collected, if he doesn't have the earliest lien, it can be taken away from him. So what's there to swear about? Therefore, the Tanakhama holds, since you can always get it away from them, so then what's the problem? There's nothing for her to swear about. Mashenke Benana says, if earlier lien is preceded by the later lien, then you're not going to be able to get it back, even though you have the earlier lien. Therefore, you're telling the last wife who has the latest lien, I don't want you to collect until you swear that you actually have a right and did not collect from our husband while he was alive. Because if anything happens to the field that I have, that I collected already, I will not be able to come back and take the field that you're going to collect illegally, in my opinion. You will not have to give it to me. So that must be the very simple way to understand the machlokas. That's explanation number one. Reb Nachman, Rabbi Baravua, gives a different explanation. He says that everybody agrees that, of course, you can recoup that loss. And it's not considered to be permanently collected as a judicial reality if it turns out that someone with a prior lien was deprived of collection because of your collecting on a later lien. So therefore, that's not the machlokas. So then what is the problem? Problem is that they're arguing about whether chayshinan shema taksiv kamiflagei. We're nervous. And this is the way Rashi, remember that Rashi understood that we knew that one of the fields was a problematic field and that we were nervous about it from the beginning. And therefore, the issue is that if the fourth wife goes ahead and collects and is worried that who knows how long I'm going to be able to keep this field, and it's the last field that's available in the estate, and if any of the other ones are going to lose the field, then I'm out. So just like, remember, we had a concern before that in a case where there's a mima'enes, remember, Katana who could be mima'enes, that the idea is that the husband of a mima'enes is going to essentially destroy any property that she brings into the marriage because he's nervous that she's going to walk out at any point. So he's not going to invest in the property. Instead, he's going to make use of it as much as he can to get as much money out of it as he can. Well, that's what we're worried about over here. Since she is not sure about the fact that she's going to be able to keep this field, so she's not going to invest in it. And therefore, she might actually cause this field to go down in value by using up its nourishment and so on and so forth without investing. So the banana sold, we're very nervous about that. So first, we make her swear that, look, it wasn't paid for me before. And therefore, there's no choice. We're going to have to give her this field. And that's like a far-off kind of issue. And just for that, we're not going to be mechayev her to make a shvua. That's explanation number two. So again, explanation number one was that they're gufa arguing whether it's recoverable to have someone who has an earlier lien. Is it recoverable from someone who collected on the basis of a later lien and then it turns out needs to be taken away from. The second explanation for Rabbi Nachman is that there's this additional issue. Are we worried that if she collects a field that she's not secure about, she might rape the field? And Abaya says, I got another explanation. I'll tell you what the Machlokas is. They're arguing about the famous case of Abaye Keshisha, the older Abaye in the previous generation. And over there, the halacha that he said, which was a tani, it was a brice tani Abaye Keshisha, in the event that you have yetomim. And we said that ain, as we said before, that we're not going to be gova minichse yetomim below shvu'ah. Does that mean the any yetomim, even the Pirates of Penzance yetomim, or does it mean kids? That's good for the machlokas. So Abaye Keshisha said the brayta, the yetomim that were mentioned over here are gedolim, even if they were adults. We are not gova minichse yetomim without a shvua. Why? Because they can't really defend themselves. Doesn't matter how old they are, they don't know what's going on with their father's business. The way the Gemara puts it, even gedolim, in the effects of their father, are ktanim. Because the father never shares with them. He treats even his adult children as kids, as fathers are wont to do. And therefore, they're not going to have all the facts at their disposal. They won't be able to contest it. And because of that, we have this takana. We will not allow collection, even though they don't have a firm claim against the collection. You're going to have to swear if you want to collect from them. The encircle mark, I mean, obviously, like, I mean, then for sure you don't have to swear. Okay, so then if that's the case, that would be a simple machlokas. The Tanakama does not agree with that psak that's brought by Abaye Keshisha. And because of that, who's the fourth wife going to swear to? The adult children? You don't have to swear to adult children. Whereas Ben-Nanas, he does hold of what Abaye Keshisha said. Namely, that I don't care how old the heirs are, wife number four is still going to have to swear to them, not to the other wives. All right, Amar Rav Huna. So now, let's take a look at this case and see how it relates to our Mishnah. Let's imagine a case where you've got two brothers or you've got two partners in a business and they have some kind of judgment, something they've got a court case, there's a suit with another guy. And this guy comes to collect from one of the partners, whether they're partners in it through business or they're partners in it through an inheritance. And one of them goes to court and he loses the case. So the other brother or partner cannot come along and say, excuse me, you can't collect this from me. You only dealt with half of the partnership. You only dealt with my brother. Now, if you want to take away my share, then you're going to have to go to court with me. And I think I'm going to win. So he can't say that. He can't say, at lav baltvorim didiat, you're not the guy that was awarded a judgment against me. Because we always assume that in cases where we've got two partners, we have two heirs, that one that is going to court is shlichut de'avad. He is basically acting on behalf of the other partner as well. See, I mean, you went to court, you lost the case. If you didn't like it that you should go to court, then you should have said something about it. Now, the question is whether we can actually see from our Mishnah that that's true. Iko Rav Nachman l'Surah. So when Rav Nachman came to Surah, they asked him whether that's true. Ki hai gav namai. So where somebody loses a case, so now there's a judgment against the estate, or there's a judgment against the business, which is a partnership. Does he have a right to say, one of the partners, I didn't go to court with you, and I did not write out a power of attorney to my brother, to my partner, to deal with you? So if he lost the case, he lost it on behalf of himself. He didn't lose it on behalf of me. And if you want to collect from me, then come along and try it out in court. So Rav Nachman says, well, what's your problem? Isn't that the Mishnah in Ketuvot that we just learned? Because it says in the Mishnah, wife number one swears to wife number two. Wife number two swears to wife number three. Wife number three swears to wife number four. Now, I don't get it. Why does wife number one only have to swear to wife number two? I mean, why can't she be attacked by wife number three or by wife number four? Why can't they come along and say, look, you swore to her, but we have our own problems. If you're going to collect, we're nervous that now we won't be able to collect. So you're going to have to swear to me too. It doesn't say that. It says Rishona Lishlishit. It doesn't mention anything about that. Well, why do you think not, says Rav Nachman? Is it not because the second wife essentially is acting as a defendant for the third wife and the fourth wife too? So when she went ahead and accepted the Shvua in Beis Din, so then she acted on behalf of all of them. So you can't go and sue as another partner, so to speak. In this case, you're another wife. What? Says the Gemara, that's not the same. Me, dummy. That's because you make a Shvua. Why would you have to make the same Shvua again? This is not a court case. This is a question of making a Shvua. So over there, a shvua to one person is no different than a shvua to 100 people. What do I care? The bottom line is I'm establishing in the court that I didn't get my ketuvah. I don't have to establish that as a fact separately for each person. What does that have to do with a case in which there's adjudication? There's absolutely nothing adjudication. There's nothing going on in court. We're just taking the shvua. So it's the same shvua, right? So in that case, obviously, she's acting on behalf. It's not because she's acting on behalf. It's because she made the shvua already. Moshe Ein Kein, over here, what are you going to say? That the same case that's argued by another partner is necessarily going to have the same outcome? That's not true. He may have all kinds of other things to Taina that the first one was naive about. Didn't Taina? I don't know. So he could certainly claim, if I would have been the one in court, I would have had much better arguments in this case. And you want to collect from me? We've got to have our own case between the two of us. Therefore, you cannot learn from our Mishnah. Not at all. But this din that we were talking about over here is talking about where when one of them went to court, the other one was out of court, out of town. But in the event that he was in town, if he didn't want the other guy to argue the case, then he should have shown up in court. Since he didn't, we take that to mean that he's basically accepting whatever the ruling will be as it was heard by the court from his business partner or from his brother. And that is a different case. Fine. Now, next thing that we see from our Mishnah, we said that if you have ketuvot that are written on the same day, then the din is that they divide everything the same. Itmar. Shnei shtarot, ayotzim miyom echad. So here we're talking about shtarot, not ketuvot. So we've got property deeds, and they have the same date on them. So this guy sold his field to more than one person on the same day. Whoa. Now that would mean that they all have precisely the same claim to the property. So Rav says, well, in that case, then the two shtarot, or how many they have, they split it because there's no way for us to determine on the basis of the property deed. We have no basis to determine who is the correct one to get it. Whereas Shmuel says, no, actually, Shuda de Dayani. Now, Shuda de Dayani is, as we've learned many times, a machlokas between Rashi and Tosafot, many of the other Rishonim get involved, but it simply means we leave it to the court's discretion. So then that would mean, as we said, that Rashi learns that it's not evidentially based, it's based on a judgment of the court as to who he most likely sold it to. Whereas Tosfos learns, Shuda de Dayani has nothing to do with judgment of any kind. It means it's the discretion of the court to whom they want to give it to and who is the one that is most deserving in their opinion. It has nothing to do with what the guy himself thought. So now, apparently, this machlokas of Rav and Shmuel should be dependent over here on a machlokas tanoim, which we don't normally like, right? I mean, why would we have Rav and Shmuel being chilek in a machlokas tanoim? So it looks like Rav is like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says what makes a shtar binding is the signature. The moment that the witnesses sign on it, this was a machlokas that was a geagite nashim, but it's true about all shtarot. So Rabbi Meir says it goes into effect at the time of the signature of the witness. Where Shmuel was going to Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar says, no, it's the handing over of the, in the case of Gittin and the Gittin, in the case of the shtar, of the shtar for the actual right to the field, so it was a shtar mekach, it's the giving over. That's called Ede Mesira Karte versus the Ede Chatima. So it's the, if Gavi wants to write this down, the machlokas is Ede Chatima Karte or Ede Mesira Karte. So that seems to be the machlokas. The witnesses, according to Rabbi Elazar, are not important. We don't need witnesses. The only reason that we need witnesses is basically for the proving of what happened. But the idea of the giving over itself in front of witnesses, that is sufficient. It's not that the shtar itself has to have the witnesses that make that shtar effective. So apparently, that's gufa, the machlokas that we have over here. Rav is saying that the only thing that makes this shtar usable is the signature. And that's what is makes it a shtar. And therefore, over here, it's exactly the situation. It didn't say in the get itself. The get, I'm using the sense of the shtar. In the shtar itself, doesn't say precisely. It says only the date. And that means that if I do that, and then somebody else has got the same thing, I have no way to make one of them more powerful than the other one. So that even if I have witnesses that one of them was given earlier in the day than the other one, it wouldn't make any difference at all. Mashen Ken Shmuel says it makes all the difference in the world. Because if I have Aiden that this get was delivered at a particular moment, so if that's the case, I'm able, if I'm a dayan, I'm able to find out which one it belongs to. And therefore, if I think to myself, well, it's very possible that this guy would have wanted to give it to Mr. A, so he probably first gave the get to Mr. A, and then he was trying to mess up the other one by taking money from him and giving him a phony get. Because now that we have witnesses that say the other one was there first, so then it would go to the other person. So since the dayan can figure this out, then he can utilize his judgment in giving it to that person. Again, this fits Rashi's approach to Shuddah the Dayani. And that would be the point. No, not necessarily. Everybody could hold like Rabbi Elazar. And that what's important is the time that it's handed over. And it's there, no problem for me to say one of these was good and one of them was a fake. I just don't know which one. The problem over here that they're arguing is when you cannot determine what is better, a chaluka or a shudda de dayani is better. So that's gufa, the question. Rav holds, look, at least if I do a chaluka, so then what should I do? I mean, I don't want to deprive somebody of something to which he is certainly shayach to as much as the other guy. So the most reasonable thing to do is give everyone a share so at least they get something of what's owed to them. Where Shmuel says, yeah, but that way, both people are definitely losing. If you give it to the person that you believe is most likely to be the correct person, so then only one person is losing. And therefore, it's better to do a Shadida Dayani. But why would that necessarily have to be the machlokas that has something to do with the Shaila of Rabbi Elazar? I don't see where it's nogea that. All that Shmuel is saying is that, look, if you're going to split it, then you're definitely doing the wrong thing. That's for sure, because this guy sold the entire field. So you're doing what's wrong. You're saying, well, at least it's a little bit right. Well, it's better to do something that may be completely right than to do something that's definitely wrong. That's the point. Wait a minute. You're saying that everybody owes like Rabbi Elazar. But we know that that isn't true, because Rav is quoted as paskening like Rabbi Elazar, but only binogea yitei nashim. The Omer of Yudah Marav, aloha kreb Elazar, begitin. Rav says that when it comes to gitin, yes, it's the edim of the Mesirah. And says Rav Yudah, and I want you to know, when I said those words over in front of Shmuel, remember that Rav Yudah, after Rav's death, went to learn by Shmuel. Shmuel's response to that statement was wrong. Af pishtar wrote, the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, even with any type of shtar, not only begitin. Now, what does that say to you? Obviously, that he understood that Rav was arguing, and Rav was saying, not with regular shtarot, only with gitin. So now, if you're talking about a land deed, how in the world can you claim that Rav holds like Rabbi Elazar? Therefore, that's not a good shot. It makes much more sense to say that, in fact, we were right the first time around, that Rav is going like Rabbi Elazar and like Rabbi Meir. And Shmuel was going Aliba the Rabbi Elazar. Right? That's what we'll have to say. Now, the question is against Shmuel. Meizve. Shnei shtarot ha-yotzim b'yom echad. The halacha is chokim b'feirish b'grav. To yofta de Shmuel. So how can Shmuel say, shudah de dayani? Says Shmuel, what's the problem? This bright is going on libet Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that the only important witnessing of the get is the signature, not handing it over. So therefore, in this case, if you ought like Rabbi Meir, either one of these could have come first, and it makes no difference to us what the Edom would say about when the shtar was delivered. And there's no possible way, because at the face value of the shtar, they have the same date. And since they have the same date, then by definition, it goes to both of them. That's why it says over here that they're chokim. I'm going Aliba to Rabbi Elazar, in which case, the Mesira is what counts. And the fact that you have two contracts with the same date doesn't mean a darn thing. According to him, it doesn't give both of them the same rights. It's one of them is the true shtar, and the other one is a fake shtar. And because of that, okay, then the Dayanim are going to have to figure out which one is more likely. Says the Gemara, how can you say it's going according to Rabbi Meir? If it's going according to Rabbi Meir, go ahead. I dare you to explain the continuation of the right. It says like this. A guy writes a bill of sale to a certain person, but then he goes ahead and he writes another shtar to a different person and gives it to the different person. What does the brayta say? The one who was given the shtar is the one that owns the field. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, that's not true. If the signature was already on the shtar, it doesn't bother Rabbi Meir that it wasn't given to that person. So why was he kena the second person? He says Eidei Chatima Karte, and if that's the case, then since Lamaisa, the two shtarot have the same date and both were signed on the same date, so we're back to the problem that they have exactly the same claim. And it has nothing to do with which one got it earlier. At least that's what Rabbi Meir would have said. And if the Braisa doesn't say that, then it's going according to Rabbi Elazar, because it's saying very clearly that whoever got it first is the one that has the schus to it, which means that Eidei Mesirah Karteh, So if this brisa is going to Rebbe Alibi to Rebbe Elazar, so then in the Reisha, that means that just because it has the same date on it, that doesn't mean a darn thing, because one of them was given first. And therefore, one of them owns the whole thing. So why would we say Chalukah based on that? And Afal Pi Kein, the Braisa says that it's Chalukah, which means that Shmuel has no case in which we would say Shuda D'Dayanan. So this is clearly better than Shuda D'Dayanan, according to Braisa, is Chalukah. Okay, you're right. The truth is that the question of whether Chalukah or Shuda D'Dayanan is better, that itself is a Machlokas Tanya. The Tanya. In the case where a person was made a shliach, right? And somebody says to him, say, Reuven says to Reb Barnea, go and deliver this money. It's a present that I'm sending to someone in Antukia. Nobody goes to Antukia except Reb Barnea, so that's why he made him the shliach. He comes to Antukia, and guess what? The guy that was supposed to get the gift has died. Now, he doesn't know whether he is supposed to, in the mind of the Mishaleach, was he supposed to give it to the children? Or maybe he didn't like the children. Maybe he only wanted to give it to the father. And then what happened was that he calls the other guy to find out, and it turns out that the other guy dropped dead meanwhile. Oh my God, what's he supposed to do? Does he give it back to the sender's Yorshim, or does he give it to the recipient's Yorshim? What do we do there? So, in that case, the Chachamim said, Yachloku, we should split it. Give half of it to the sender's heirs, and give half of it to the Mekabel's heirs. And that's what they said in Eretz Yisrael. But Kanamru over here in Bava, they said, he should do whatever he thinks is right. Masha Yirtze HaShalish Yaseh. He should make a judgment, like, what does he feel the person would have wanted? Or again, according to Tosfos, this is the equivalent of Shuda D'Dayanan, and it means that you give it to the one who's most deserving, in your opinion. Anyway, so Shmuel apparently was going according to the Chachamim in Bava, and the Braisa was going according to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. That seems to be precisely the issue. And in that case, you can't ask Akasha on Shmuel. By the way, it's a very important psak that comes from this, this story, because the Shaliach in this case was not a Bezdin. And it says over here that you do what the Shliach thinks, and we're calling that the equivalent of Shuda D'Dayanan, which means that the concept of Shuda D'Dayanan is not defined by having professional Dayanan, certainly not having Mumchim. And if that's the case, we're going to have to explain the cases that are coming up, because we do make use of the difference of a judge in the case that's coming. What happened over here, this is a classic story, my God. So we had two very famous people, as you will recall. There's Rami Bar Chama, we talk about him all the time, and there's Mar Ukva Bar Chama, we talk about him all the time, right? Now, these two Bar Chamas actually had a common mother, quite a common situation. Anyway, what happens is that the mother of these two boys, she writes one of them a gift of her property. And what happened was, in the morning, she wrote a shtar to Rami Bar Chama, and in the evening of the same day, she writes the same thing that she owned, she writes to Mar Ukva Bar Chama. Now, we have no idea who got the shtar first. So what happened is, Rami Bar Chama comes to Reb Sheshet, and he says, I want to take the field. So Reb Sheshet says, okay, Rami, you get the field. I have no idea why, but anyway, Upu Benichsa. So Mar Ukva went to Reb Nachman to sue for the field. Why should Rami get the field? I am her beloved son. I should get the field. So also Marukva lekami de Reb Nachman. Reb Nachman says Marukva gets the field. Oh my gosh! So this is getting to be a really complicated argument over here. Anyway, Reb Sheshes comes to Reb Nachman. Reb Sheshes, who had awarded the field to Rami, he comes to Reb Nachman. He says to Reb Nachman, "Why'd you do that? Why'd you undo my ruling, and instead you gave it to Marukva?" So Reb Sheshes asks him. So Reb Nachman says to him, "Well, why don't you tell me why you did what you did first? Why did you give it to Rami that you're coming to ask me why I gave it to Marukva?" Well, Reb Sheshes says to Reb Nachman, "I gave it to Rami because his shtar was actually signed before the other one. So because of that, I felt that it should go, and he's the first one." So basically, what we're saying is that since it was given to him, as comes out in the Gemara elsewhere, since it was given to him, it means that that's when it was basically signed, so to speak. And he therefore gets it. So basically, he's agreeing. If in this case, this is the truth is the Rishonim argue, but I mean, you could say that he means literally he knew that it was signed first, which is the way the Pashtus is Rashi holds, and that therefore I hold of Rabbi Meir. Okay. There's a number of other explanations. Let's keep it as simple as possible. All right. So I gave it to him because he was the one that was signed first. But the problem is, of course, that both of these were signed on the same day. The mother in the morning gave it to Rami, and in the evening gave it to Mar Ukva, and both of them were on the same day. So what Reb Sheshes was saying doesn't really make much sense, because if you hold that the shtar is defined by its face dating, then this makes, I mean, who cares? In which exactly Reb Nachman attacked him. Reb Nachman says to Reb Sheshes, "Excuse me, do we live in Yerushalayim here? To be Yerushalayim, Yatvina, Dekatvina, Chaot. The Gemara says that in Yerushalayim, they had the minhag of putting the actual time, but we don't have that here. People do not put the time on the shtar. And therefore, if we just have the date, don't talk to me about just because it was written in the morning, what does that mean? So therefore, I say that Mar Ukva and Rami Bar Chama are basically able to both come into court and claim that it goes to them." So then says Reb Sheshes, "Okay, so if you're saying that they both have equal claim, why did you turn the judgment that I had, why did you turn it upside down? I mean, you can't say that I'm wrong, so mar my time off, you know, why'd you take it away from him after it was already in court?" Amar lei, "Because shoulda did I own it. It's up to my discretion, okay? And I hold that I believed that Mar Ukva was the one who was the most beloved son, and therefore he gets it. He's really a sweet kid. I don't know about this Rami guy." Anyway, so I think his mother likes him better. Man, oh man, you know what this does to have a court decide that your mother likes your brother better. Anyway, fine. So this is what Reb Nachman says. So then, if that's the case, since that's probable, so Rashi says, she must have given it to Mar Ukva first, because that's who she really loves. And if I hold like Reb Elazar, so then that's it, right? And therefore, if she gives a phony contract to Rami because she's afraid he's going to think she doesn't love him, it's phony. She doesn't love him. So, because
that's not Rebbe's that's how Rebbe's learning the kadma of a muscle of tchila.
I said it's a machlokas.
Even in Rashi,
I said before it's a machlokas.
Okay,
that's the simple pshat. Fine, says Reb Sheshes. Okay, fine. So you disagree with the way I did it. So at least give my judgment of giving it over to Rami. I mean, it could also be a shudder to Dayane. I mean, if you're telling me that it's not a din, so how can you overturn a shudder to Dayane of another Dayan? I mean, that makes no sense. He was already there. I already had given him the sada. So can't you tell me I'm also a shenada dayani? Omar lay, well, the reason I can throw out your judgment, there's two reasons. First of all, you ain't no dayani. I am. So this gets us back. That's why I raised the issue earlier about the Rabbanea case in Antukia, right? Because he was no dayani either. But if we're talking about a case in which one of the people who make the shudda is a dayan, so I am a dayan in the sense that, as we saw, I have the official right to be dayan because he was actually made a dayan by the Resh Galuta and so on. So he's not saying Reb Sheshes is incompetent. He's just saying that you don't have that level. So because of that, if you're going to be using shudda, then the most experienced and most empowered judge should be the shudda. Right? If that's the case, I had a right to overturn you. That's number one. Secondly, your taina doesn't even make any sense. Because what you're saying is that I should treat your judgment as a shudda de dayani, and therefore, how can one shudda de dayani overturn another shudda de dayani? If you would have been a judge like me, that would have been a good taina. In this case, it still isn't a good taina, because that was not the basis of your decision. You admitted that yourself to me a minute ago. And you said that it was because the earlier shtar. Well, you didn't come here to award this on the basis of a shudda de dayani. You said that I'm awarding it to him because he had the signature first, so to speak. However we understand those terms. So in that was not true. Because like I said to you before, we don't live in Yerushalayim. And therefore, on the face of the shtar, that's a meaningless statement. So the whole psak that you had was a mistake. It was not a shudda de dayani. And even if it were a shudda de dayani, I'm the dayan around here and not you. So I say, Mar Ukva gets it. And there was also a case where two shtarot, Anu Trei Shtari, the author of the commentary of Rabbi Yosef, one of them had on it the date of the fifth day of Nisan. And one of them had Nisan without saying the date. So now this is sort of similar because we're talking about here where we're misopic about which came first, because the other one might have been the first day of Nisan, or it might have been the 29th day of Nisan. I don't know. So what do we do in that case? So they came and asked Rabbi Yosef, Ukma Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef said, the guy who's got the shtar that is dated on the 5th, he gets the property. So the other one said to Rabbi Yosef, what? And I lose out entirely? Amar lei, yes. At yadach ala tachtona. You have a very looser claim. Because maybe you only got your shtar on the 29th day of Nisan, you know? I don't know. So how could you possibly come and get it before a guy who definitely has the 5th? So then he said, okay, if that's the case, so then I would like you, Reb Yosef, to be nichtav limar tirfa mi'ir ve'elech. Listen, at least I should get a shtar from you that says that from Iyar. I understand that you're saying I may be the last day of Nisan, right? But if he sold, the guy who sold this to me, and now you're saying I can't use this shtar collected because maybe the other guy is the right shtar, so he really messed me up, seriously. I'm going to come to him, and I'm going to insist on my property insurance, right? Now, if he sold any of those properties, so at least I should be able to collect them. Anything that he sold at the last moment where you agree that at least I get it from the 29th of Nisan. So from the 1st of year onwards, if he sold anything, I should have a right to collect it for my property insurance, right? No, says Rabbi Yosef. Sorry. What? Why? You can't get me from both ends. Yes, I can. Because listen, the guy that you want to take away the property from can say to you, What's that? Excuse me? You basically have your shtar from the first day of Nisan. It might have been written on the first day of Nisan. Now, when you bought that, okay, there was another field here. And when I went ahead, I brought something that you had a field that was available, which, I don't know, why didn't you take it? I couldn't take it because I couldn't prove. Well, that's not my problem. That's your problem. You see, you couldn't take it because you couldn't prove when it was that you had the right to your property insurance. Don't come after me and say, poor me has to pay you for the other guy's property insurance when there was a perfectly good field that was there on that day that was for your property insurance. So go collect it. It's not my business. Oh, my God. So what can they possibly do over here? So all he can do, what he can do, is he can ask the other guy to write him a power of attorney. And that way, nichtavu arsha'al hadadi. So what the guy who doesn't have any specific day in Nisan, what he does is he asks the other guy to give me a power of attorney to sue the seller of anything that is supposed to be paid for the property insurance. And if the guy claims what he's claiming now, I say, okay, fine. When do you say that it should go into effect? Oh, from the fifth, here's my power of attorney. I'm suing you on the basis of the fifth. So that one way or the other, if the guy says, okay, so then I don't want to pay you. Let's say this other fellow had bought it on the first of Iyar, like we're saying. There's nothing he can do. Because if he's going to claim that it was really going back to the first of Nisan, and because of that, Reuven, let's call him first guy, so he has the right to the property. So why is he suing? I'm saying, well, I'm not suing for me. I'm suing for this other guy. Here's my power of attorney. And that was from the fifth. If he claims that this Mr. Reuven is from the 29th, so then Reuven says, okay, fine. So then he sold me the Brooklyn Bridge. He sold me a property that he'd already sold. So no matter what it is that he's going to claim, that way, if he could persuade the other person to give him a power of attorney, he would at least be able to get back the money through the property insurance.